stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Israel arrests suspects in the death of a Palestinian teen. And in Kenya, more Al-Shabaab violence. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. Israeli police have arrested six Jewish suspects in the kidnapping and killing of a Palestinian teenager who was burned to death. Authorities say the suspects in the killing of 16-year-old Mohammed Abu Kuder had nationalist motives and belonged to an extremist Jewish group. The killing, apparently in revenge for three Israeli teenagers who were abducted and later found dead, set off 4 days of violent protests in Jerusalem and Israeli Arab towns and had Israel's president Shimon Peres pleading with leaders in the towns for peace and promising justice.
Even in the future, quiet will call for quiet, and if we shall be attacked, we shall react accordingly, keeping our values, not only our weapons, keeping our responsibility, not only our feelings.
Meanwhile, an Israeli judge has released the 15-year-old American cousin of Abu Kuder from jail, but ordered him held under 9 days house arrest. Tariq Abu Kuder was visiting family in East Jerusalem when he was apprehended 3 days ago during fighting with police. A video circulated on the internet shows two Israeli border policemen repeatedly beating him. As he left court today, the teenager said he's now all right, but described the attack.
He hit me in the face. They brutally hit me.
What is the reason? Did you do something wrong?
I couldn't. He put me unconscious.
With the continued unrest, Israel said it has carried out 10 airstrikes on sites in the Gaza Strip. The early morning operation targeted sites where the Israeli army says Palestinians have launched rockets into Israel. The Kenyan Red Cross's attackers have killed at least 22 people in two counties on the Kenyan coast, including an area where militants killed 65 people last month. Officials said today a group of a dozen or so men carried out the overnight attacks in Lamu and Tana River counties. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's Red Cross says the attacks occurred nearly simultaneously late Saturday in the areas of Gamba in Tana River County and in the trading center of Hindi in neighboring Lamu County. Kenya Red Cross Society External Relations Director Wariko Waita says most of the casualties were civilians.
What we have confirmed in Gamba, 9 fatalities confirmed, and we have 1 evacuated for treatment in Lamu. At the current moment, the confirmation there is 12 fatalities.
Waita says 2 people critically wounded in Hindi are being airlifted for treatment. The Al-Qaeda-linked militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for both incidents. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
Nigeria's army says it killed 53 Boko Haram militants during an attack on the military base in the northeastern town of Demboa. A spokesman said 6 soldiers were also killed. Demboa is in Borno State near the village of Chibok, where Boko Haram kidnapped more than 200 schoolgirls in April. Those girls are still being held hostage. Ugandan officials say 40 gunmen died in a shootout between state security forces and tribal militia near the border with the Democratic Republic of Congo. A military spokesman tweeted that 41 men armed with guns, spears, and machetes attacked police posts and army barracks on Saturday. Police say the attackers killed at least 12 people. Afghan presidential candidate Abdullah Abdullah says he will not accept preliminary vote results due to be released tomorrow. Abdullah told voters in Kabul he will only accept the results of the presidential runoff election when what he called clean votes are separated from unclean votes and all fraud allegations are resolved. His opponent says the preliminary results must be released.
Judging the results does not depend on the concurrence of one of the players. The results are going to be judged. But what is desirable, of course, is that His Excellency Dr. Abdullah participate in the process.
That was former finance minister Ashraf Ghani. Abdullah is alleging mass fraud and has been committed during the runoff vote that pitted him against the former finance minister. In World Cup, Argentina knocked off Belgium 1-0 yesterday. The Netherlands posted a 4-3 penalty shootout over Costa Rica. So what does that mean? Argentina and the Netherlands face each other Wednesday in Sao Paulo. Brazil and Germany face each other Tuesday. Championship game is July 13th. I'm Marty Johnson reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening. It's Sunday, July 6th, and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Mpuga.
Officials in Kenya say at least 21 people have been killed in two attacks overnight near the same area where 60 people were killed in a terrorist assault last month.
Deadly new attacks in the Kenyan coastal region.
There are several studies showing that the treatment and prevention of tuberculosis is cost-effective, so that the society costs due to tuberculosis are much higher than the investment needed to prevent them.
International public health officials announced plans to eliminate tuberculosis in more than 30 countries.
Everything has changed. It's not the same thing, it's not the same history. We don't forget what happened in terms of history, but nothing to compare.
Yes, and the World Cup in Brazil enters the semi-final stage. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Officials in Kenya say at least 22 people have been killed in two attacks overnight near the same area where 60 people were killed in a terrorist assault last month. VOA's Gabe Joslo has more from Nairobi.
Kenya's Red Cross says the attacks occurred nearly simultaneously late Saturday in the areas of Gamba in Tana River County and in the trading center of Hindi in neighboring Lamu County. Security officials say gunmen stormed a police station in Gamba, killing officers inside. Local media report the assailants also freed a detainee being held at the police station on suspicion of involvement in the attack last month. The Al-Qaeda-linked militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for both incidents. Kenya Red Cross Society External Relations Director Wariko Waita says most of the casualties in Saturday's attack were civilians.
What we have confirmed in Gamba, most of the assessment has been completed. Unfortunately, we have 9 fatalities confirmed, and we have 1 casualty evacuated for treatment. For Hindi, in Lamu, the assessment continues. At the current moment, the confirmation there is 12 fatalities.
Waita says 2 people critically wounded in Hindi are being airlifted for treatment. Hindi is near to the area of Mpeketoni, where gunmen last month killed at least 60 people and torched properties in multiple coordinated attacks. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta said the violence in Mpeketoni was politically motivated, despite the claim of responsibility by Al-Shabaab militants. Kenya's coast has been struck several times this year with grenade and bomb attacks targeting resort hotels and public places. In March, gunmen opened fire on a church outside the city of Mombasa, killing 6 people. And last month, a moderate Muslim cleric was also shot dead in Mombasa, the 4th religious leader killed in the area in the past 2 years. Meanwhile, security forces are bracing for a planned political rally Monday in the capital, Nairobi, organized by supporters of former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. Gabe Joslo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Meanwhile, Kenya security officials in the coastal city of Mombasa say they have beefed up security in areas prone to violence as political and tribal tensions grow in the country. The political opposition is expected to hold a major rally in the capital, Nairobi, this week to press the government to convene a national forum to discuss the country's worsening security, economic and political situation. For VOA, Mohamed Yusuf reports from Mombasa.
There has been tangible tension in the air in recent weeks as the opposition led by former Prime Minister Raila Odinga crisscrossed the country holding public rallies, demanding the government to convene a national forum. As a political showdown looms at a Nairobi rally on Monday over how the country should be managed, the impact is being felt far away from the capital. Kenya media reports some communities are leaving the conflict-prone Rift Valley for fears of attacks. The region was the centre of most of the political violence and intercommunal fighting that erupted around elections 7 years ago. That violence left more than 1,100 people dead and displaced hundreds of thousands of Kenyans. Hundreds of kilometres away in the country's second largest city, Mombasa, security officers are on high alert for a variety of types of violence. City Police Commissioner Nelson Marwa says They will seriously deal with those who want to start chaos.
You cannot just sit back and watch criminals take over a system. You have to act back. And how, even if it is developed countries, do you just sit and watch criminals kill innocent citizens? You act. So we are not ready to just to sit back as a country.
In 2008, post-election violence, police were accused of not doing enough to protect civilians and stop the violence. Now, Marwa says they are providing more security to some areas in the city they feel are vulnerable.
We feel certain areas in the county are already being given special emphasis. Just like you go in other countries, some of them are slum areas, and you know, slum areas have specific characteristics. Poor people live in slum areas, and unemployed youth live in slum areas. It is easy to manipulate a poor person. It is easy to manipulate an unemployed person. You give him some small money, he takes it to the, into the streets. Right. That's why we are saying these are specific areas we should safeguard, ensure that there is tight security there.
Mombasa has been plagued by a more recent spate of violence, with a wave of attacks linked to Islamist militants, sectarian backlashes and crackdown on secessionists. Just last month, a group of gunmen stormed the coastal town of Mpeketoni, killing more than 60 people and torching properties worth millions. In his address to the nation after that attack, President Uhuru Kenyatta said that violence was ethnically motivated, despite a claim by the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab that it carried out the attack. Lamu Governor Isa Timami was arrested in connection with the Mpeketoni incident. Timami was charged with murder, forceful eviction of population and terrorism. The governor was released on June 30th on a $57,000 cash bail by a high court in Mombasa. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Mombasa.
In Uganda, military officials say 40 gunmen are dead following a skirmish between state security forces and tribal militia near the Democratic Republic of Congo border. A military spokesman tweeted 41 armed men attacked police posts and army barracks Saturday in three districts of Uganda. According to police, attackers came armed with guns, spears and machetes. Police say the attackers killed at least 12 people. The attacks occurred in three districts of Uganda, Kasese, Ntoroko and Wundibugyo, all of which have a history of tribal violence against the state. Pakistani teenager human rights activist Malala is speaking out in support of the more than 200 Nigerian girls kidnapped by Boko Haram in Nigeria's northeastern Borno state. The girls have been missing for more than 11 weeks. VOA's Carla Babb has more.
When girls are targeted by terrorists, no matter where they are in the world, it hits home for Malala Yousafzai. In 2012, Yousafzai was shot and nearly killed by the Pakistani Taliban because of her efforts to promote education for women and girls. The attack only amplified her voice. She tells VOA in an exclusive interview that it is now her duty to speak up for the more than 200 teenage girls kidnapped by Islamic radical group Boko Haram in Nigeria.
I stand up with those girls for their rights, and I request the whole world that they should also raise their voices for those girls.
In April, Boko Haram abducted the girls from a secondary school in the Nigerian town of Chibok. The militants killed hundreds of students, both male and female, in previous attacks on schools. The group's name in Hausa means Western education is a sin.
I believe that every girl has the right to go to school. And girls in Nigeria also have the right to go to school. It's the right to go to school to get education, as it is the right of girls in the developed countries.
Just last week, suspected Islamist militants carried out another mass kidnapping in the region, seizing 60 women and girls. Yousafzai is worried for their safety.
We don't know in what conditions those girls are. They are all alone. They are without their families. And no one knows what feelings they would have at this time.
Nigerian authorities have been unable to rescue the girls, despite intelligence and surveillance help from the United States and other countries. Officials have expressed concern that any military operation to free the girls would endanger their lives. Carla Babb, VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, Nigeria's army says it killed 53 Boko Haram militants during an attack on the military base in the northeastern town of Damboa. A spokesman said six soldiers were also killed. Damboa is in Borno State and near the village of Chibok, where Boko Haram kidnapped more than 200 schoolgirls in April. The girls are still being held hostage. Boko Haram has killed thousands in its terror campaign to turn northern Nigeria into a conservative Islamic state. International public health officials have announced plans to eliminate tuberculosis in more than 30 countries and that already have low TB rates. The new goal calls on those nations to prioritize efforts to drive down the infection rate to near zero. VOA's Jessica Berman has more.
Fewer than 100 TB cases per million people are reported each year in 33 countries and territories, including Jordan, the United Arab Emirates, Malta, and the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Still, that translates to 155,000 new infections and some 10,000 deaths. The new framework, driving down the tuberculosis rate to fewer than 10 new cases per million annually by 2035, was outlined this week in Rome. International public health officials are meeting there to coordinate TB elimination efforts. The ultimate goal is eradication of the disease in those countries by 2050. The WHO defines elimination as less than one new case per million people each year. Giovanni Battista Migliori is head of the European Respiratory Society and director of the WHO Collaborating Center for Tuberculosis and Lung Diseases.
We need an extra coordination of all the areas, all the compartments of this TB control elimination program. And those are eight main areas.
Migliori says the eight key interventions include increased funding to screen for active and silent TB infection in high-risk groups, such as people with HIV, residents of impoverished communities, and migrants from neighboring countries. In addition, he says, the government should invest in research into new tools to rapidly identify and treat tuberculosis, including multidrug-resistant strains. Migliori says there's a strong motivation for low-burden countries to try to eliminate TB.
There are several studies showing that the treatment and prevention of tuberculosis is cost-effective, so that the society costs due to tuberculosis are much higher than the investment needed to prevent them.
Migliori says a renewed push to eliminate TB is needed, so a resurgence of a preventable and treatable disease does not occur in low-burden countries. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's 19 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Nightline Africa, coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. A recap of our headline news. Officials in Kenya say at least 22 people have been killed in two attacks overnight near the same area where 60 people were killed in a terrorist assault last month. In Uganda, military officials say 40 gunmen are dead following a skirmish between state security forces and tribal militia near the Democratic Republic of Congo border. And in Nigeria, Nigerian army says it's killed 53 Boko Haram militants during an attack on a military base in the northeastern town of Damboa, according to a spokesman who said six soldiers were also killed. In other news, Sagachi Research, a market intelligence firm dedicated to African markets, has released the second edition of its report on shopping centers across the African continent. Sagachi Research Managing Director Julian Garcia says the report was a result of several months of investigation and information gathered highlights an extremely active market with important differences between countries and regions. Garcia tells reporter Peter Clote that as a good indicator of the attractiveness of the industry, 60 new shopping centers projects have been announced since publication of the company's last report in May 2013.
Well, the main finding is that the market is very active. This is the second edition of the report, so we did the first one last year at the same period, and what we found is 60 new malls, new projects across Africa, excluding South Africa, over the period. So the development of a new middle class across Africa and the interest of a lot of international retailers for Africa makes that a lot of mall developers are trying to build up new projects to accommodate these needs.
Did your findings also look at the patronage of locals? But what about the participation or patronage of the indigenes or the local people in those countries that you surveyed?
Well, we looked at all the malls, right? We didn't only focus on malls that were catering for the expatriate community of the higher society. We look at all the malls, right? A mall being at least I would say 5,000 square meters, so it means at least a supermarket and a few stores around, whoever it caters to, right? So some of the malls we identified across Africa are malls that only cater to locals. So there was no willingness on our side to only focus on a specific segment.
How popular are these malls? What did you find? How popular are they?
Well, first, it's two very different dynamics between North Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa. North Africa is a market which is similar to South Africa. At least it is highly developed with a lot of malls, a lot of very big malls. The reason for that is, one, because the population is wealthy, wealthier than Sub-Saharan Africa, and also there's a lot of interest by Middle East real estate developers that develop big malls. That said, you know, so in North Africa, malls are very popular. There is an important mall culture that is being developed. In Sub-Saharan Africa, the situation is a little bit different. The malls are much smaller. The obviously only a small share of the population is able to go to these malls and to purchase goods from these malls. However, what we see is these malls are the only alternative or the only places to find modern stores in a lot of these countries. So today, if you live in, let's say, in Ghana, if you want to see some modern stores and to purchase goods from modern international stores, the only place where you can get this is in a mall.
How do you grade the malls in Africa specifically?
So what we did is we position ourselves in the shoes of an international retailer, whether it is a food or non-food retailer, and we try to rank each one of the mall based on the attractiveness for such a retailer. So what makes the attractiveness? One is the style of the mall, the architecture, the way it is built, the place where it is located. And then the most important is which brands and which tenants are today present in these malls. And so the ranking is based on the density of international brands in this mall. It's based on the density of regional African, South African brands in this mall, and then on the density of local brands. The more international, the more South African, the more African chains you have in the mall, the higher your ranking is going to be.
That was Julian Garcia. He's a Sagachi Research Managing Director. He spoke with reporter Peter Clote from Paris, France. And as Europe marks the century anniversary of World War I, Germany and France battled over a very different goal this week, a place in the World Cup semifinals. This time, Germany emerged the victor in Friday's quarterfinal match in Brazil. From Paris, Lisa Brandt reports on old rivalries and the close bonds between the two nations that cement Europe today.
France's fate was not yet sealed early Friday evening, and at bars across Paris, supporters of Les Bleus, as the French team is known, were still hoping for an upset over Germany. That included marketing consultant Thierry Littera, who dropped by this northeastern Paris cafe with his friends.
We do, because we want to see other matches and to have fun and to enjoy, because it's always a nice moment. It was really good until now. It's a bit weaker right now on this match, but it's not over yet, so everything is still possible.
Like just about everywhere in the World Cup is dominating the news and dinner table conversations here, overshadowing reports about France's gloomy economy and the latest political scandals. Football, wrote one French newspaper, seems to be the only thing working in France these days. Parisian Abdel Karim disagrees. A lot of things work in France, he says, not just sports. Since Karim's own team from Algeria lost to Germany, he's been cheering for France. On the field and off, the French-German rivalry is an old story. It played out during the 1982 World Cup semifinals in Spain. West Germany won, but not before the German goalkeeper left a French player with a cracked vertebra and broken teeth. And of course, there have been more brutal battles over the centuries, including in World War I, whose centenary is being marked this year, and World War II. France, the rest of Europe, and most of the world commemorated the 70th anniversary last month of the Allies' D-Day attack on German armies occupying France. Today, Germany and France are Europe's economic engines. They helped to found the European Union, and their cooperation is key to powering it. For soccer fan Litera, it's a different world.
Everything has changed. It's not the same thing, it's not the same history. We don't forget what happened in terms of history, but nothing to compare.
To be sure, old rivalries remain. Tourists Gabby and Abraham are the only Germans at this Paris bar.
It's not so good when German players win, when we're here. When we are at home, it's very good.
But Gabby says bitter feelings between Germans and French are buried with the past.
I am not lived. When the war was, and we cannot say was it good or was it wrong, and now we say nothing. This is a soccer match, and the best shall win.
Germany proved to be the best Friday night, beating France 1-0. The battle for the World Cup goes on, but the bigger wars are over. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris. Put your flags up in the sky, juggling the world. And
feel. It's your world, my world, our world today. And we invite the whole world to play. It's your world, my world, our world today. And we invite the whole world to play. En mi mundo, tu mundo, el mundo de nosotros. Invitamos a todo el mundo a jugar con nosotros.
One night, watch the world unite, two sides.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. Coming up in the second half of the program, sports with Segun Adeyemi from the Nigerian commercial capital Lagos, and music from African Collection for your listening pleasure and indeed relaxation. Yes, now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that we go straight to Lagos and join Segun on the dot at DMA. Good evening, Segun.
Good evening, Douglas, and good evening, Africa. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports for Sunday, July 6th. The stage is set for the semifinals of the 2014 FIFA World Cup in Brazil. The four semifinalists emerge after the quarterfinal matches played on Friday and Saturday. On Friday, host Brazil beat Colombia 2-1, while Germany dispatched France 1-0. And on Saturday, Argentina pipped Belgium 1-0, while the Netherlands eliminated the tournament's Cinderella team, Costa Rica, on penalties, after both teams played goalless at full and extra time play. Brazil will take on Germany in the first semi-final on Tuesday in Belo Horizonte. The following day, Wednesday, it will be the turn of the Netherlands and Argentina in Sao Paulo. We'll have more on the semifinals later, but first, let's return here to Nigeria. The axe of World Soccer's governing body, FIFA, is dangling over Nigeria's head. The actions taken by the authorities here since Nigeria's elimination from the World Cup have offended FIFA. First, a regional court last week ordered the dismissal of the Nigeria Football Federation, NFF, executive, after the Super Eagles were eliminated from the World Cup by France in the last 16 on Monday. The court also mandated the sports minister to appoint a caretaker administrator who quickly called new elections. On Friday, NFF President Aminu Megari was detained by police on his arrival back from Brazil, but later released. On Saturday, the NFF executives were voted out after being accused of botching up Nigeria's World Cup campaign. However, there are indications that FIFA will not recognize the decisions of the Extraordinary General Assembly of the NFF, which voted to dissolve the Federation's board and fire all management staff. The General Assembly also announced that Mr. Lawrence Katkin will act as Secretary General of the NFF until a substantive Secretary General is appointed. Ahead of the Extraordinary General Assembly in the nation's capital, Abuja, FIFA had warned of a possible suspension of the African nation. FIFA warned on Friday that if the NFF officials were not restored to their posts by next Tuesday, the country could be suspended from all international football activities. FIFA said an official football congress was called for August 26th. FIFA rules protect its 209 member federations from government interference. Any possible suspension bars teams and officials from taking part in international matches and meetings. Talking about Nigeria, Super Eagles coach Steven Keshi, as well as some of his players, have been commenting on the team's elimination from the World Cup in Brazil. They spoke after the second round match, which they lost 2-0 to France. First is Keshi.
The boys that played, they did everything that we wanted them to do. They were playing so well up to the last 15 minutes of the game, and they were considered a goal that was very difficult to swallow. But it's also disappointing because I think the goal that was scored was a very clean goal. Nothing happened to that goal at all.
Next is goalkeeper Vincent Nyama.
I don't know, I'm talking about myself. We're feeling so sad that we let Nigerians down. We're feeling so sad that we couldn't live up to the expectation. I saw us in the semifinals and I believe we could go that far, and I think we could. One makes up and everything turned the other way, but this is life.
Finally, Shola Amiobi.
You know, it's a dream come true for any footballer to play in the World Cup. It's something that I've wanted for a long time, and for it to happen towards the latter stage of my career is just been incredible. I've enjoyed every minute. I've tried to take in the whole experience because I know obviously time is against me. So I've just loved being with the guys. We give everything we had. You know, unfortunately they scored and we didn't. We had a goal disallowed. You know, we had the corner and the ball fell to Pogba when the keeper came out. But, you know, for me, we took the game to them. And, you know, on another day, we probably could have won it. So I don't think we can be disappointed with the way we played. Obviously, the result didn't went against us, and that's obviously the most disappointing thing.
You've been listening to Nigerian players and coach Stephen Keshi commenting on the Super Eagles' elimination from the 2014 FIFA World Cup in Brazil. Many thanks to reporter Tony Atkins in Brazil for the audio clips. Back to the World Cup semifinals. Three of the four semifinalists have won the tournament 10 times among them. Brazil has won the World Cup a record 5 times, Germany 3, and Argentina twice. Of the four semifinalists, only the Netherlands has never won FIFA's most coveted trophy, even though the team has finished runner-up 3 times. Also notable is the fact that the four semifinalists have, among them, reached the final of the World Cup a total of 21 times. Brazil 7 times, Germany 7 times, Argentina 4, and the Netherlands 3. Now, looking ahead to the semifinals, how bright are the chances of host Brazil against Germany, considering the injury that has knocked Brazilian star Neymar out of the tournament? Here is a preview of the clash by a top Nigerian football commentator, Emeka Odipo from Brazil.
Almost all the South American play that is their simplistic style. And so now Brazil will have to look for other means of getting their goals. Fred, who is put there to see to divert attention from Neymar, is not helping matters. He has not lived up to the billing at all. So it's going to be a big problem. I put this question to a journalist from Brazil here, and he referred me to 1962 World Cup when Pelé was injured and couldn't play. And they brought another player who scored 3 goals even in the match. Surprise, virtually everybody, to make Brazil qualify for the final, which they eventually won. And that they believe that this time around, they may find the person. I don't know who they will find. I know that those that they have are not being up to the Pelé he talked about, or even the man that scored the goals, he couldn't name him. So I believe it's going to be a big problem. And I believe, too, that the Germans will join this loophole. One is that the Germans will attack, knowing that, yes, they are looking a very blunt attack. They may have the support of the field, that is because they are playing home, but that's not enough.
That was Nigerian top football commentator Emeka Odipo previewing Tuesday's Brazil-Germany match in the semifinals of the 2014 FIFA World Cup in Brazil. In other news, FIFA could take action against Colombia's Juan Zuniga for the World Cup quarterfinal challenge that left Brazilian superstar Neymar with a fractured back. A spokeswoman said on Saturday, Delia Fisher says the FIFA disciplinary committee is analyzing all the elements provided, the videos and the match reports, and will decide whether or not to take action. Neymar was injured in Brazil's 2-1 win over Colombia on Friday. When Zuniga kneed him in the back, the Barcelona forward will miss the rest of the World Cup. Zuniga, who plays for Napoli in Italy, has denied he intentionally sought to hurt the 22-year-old Brazilian. The Colombian defender has sent a letter of apology to Neymar, saying he is deeply sorry and sad for being responsible for the injury that knocked the Brazil striker out of the World Cup. Meanwhile, Brazil great Ronaldo has said the injury that knocked Neymar out of the World Cup was, quote, an intention by the Colombia player to actually cause some harm, unquote. Also, soccer great Pelé said on Saturday that his heart ached for Neymar. Neymar has urged his Brazil teammates to win the World Cup without him. Finally, FIFA says it has suspended Brazil's team spokesman from matchday duty for the rest of the World Cup after he clashed with a Chile player. Rodrigo Paiva shoved Chile substitute Mauricio Pinilla as the teams left the pitch at halftime of a second-round match. Paiva denied throwing punches during the incident in Belo Horizonte on June 28th and accused Chile's team of deplorable conduct. FIFA's disciplinary panel imposed a four-match ban and fined Paiva 10,000 Swiss francs, or about $11,180. That ends it for this weekend's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Segun Adeyemi in Lagos. Now back to Douglas the Mighty Mpuga in Washington.
Thank you, Segun. Segun on the Dota DMA will be back again next Sunday for another look at African sports right here on Nightline Africa. Now this is the time for some music from the continent. So here we go. Sit down, back, relax and enjoy.
Enjoy. Le propriétaire de tous les dossiers. Hey, 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 hey. Avec la participation de Jocelyne Berroa. Hey, 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 hey. Ah, yo, Afrika, Afrika, ngase ka tu la bibamba, nyonso bamba, baninga na ka pinch, pinch na yo, kutunga makamingi, koleka kutunga moto na zanga.
Anybody waiting in the
Lelu kajisake, mashala lelu kajigengelele. nanda mbidi mumwe mama pieret gene.
Yes, that was our Sunday music spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed that music. We came to you from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Tonight, we apologize. We are unable to bring you our Sunday commentary, One Man's Points of View by Dr. James Jonah. We'll be back next week with another closer look at Africa. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Thanks very much for sharing part of your Sunday with us. Have a good evening. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late June, Ukraine, Moldova, and Georgia signed a number of agreements with the European Union aimed at increasing cooperation with these countries' Western neighbors. Moldova and Georgia each signed a far-reaching political association agreement with the EU, including a deep and comprehensive free trade area. Ukraine, which had signed the political portions of the association agreement in March, also formalized its partnership by signing the economic portions. The agreements, 5 years in the making, will lower trade barriers and promote democratic reform. For the European Union, said European Commission President Jose Barroso, it is a solemn commitment to support Georgia, the Republic of Moldova, and Ukraine each step of the way along the road of transforming their countries into stable, prosperous democracies. The European Union will lower import tariffs for the three countries and open to them the European Union market with its 500 million customers. It will also work with Ukraine, Georgia, and Moldova to bring their products up to EU quality standards. Meanwhile, the three new associate countries will also gradually open their own markets to EU goods and reduce their own tariffs as they adjust and align their economies with the European Union. The United States congratulates Georgia, Moldova, and Ukraine on the signing of the agreement and establishing deep and comprehensive trade areas with the European Union. It is not just that these agreements link the EU's eastern neighbors into its single market and unlock new opportunities for trade and assistance. Today, Moldova, Georgia, and Ukraine have signaled their readiness to undertake important economic and legal reforms that will make them stronger, more vibrant democracies, said Secretary of State John Kerry. We continue to support the territorial integrity of Georgia, Moldova, and Ukraine. The decision on the best path to security, prosperity, and a better future for their citizens is one that can and should be made by these sovereign nations and by them alone. We applaud the hard work and determination that has brought them to this point, and we will continue to stand with them as they work to implement key reforms and build more prosperous, stable, and democratic society.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.